Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I am John Arola, and I come to you today bearing not only the news, but a special treat, a rare treat. I think this is like the third time in the history of The Damage Report that this has happened. We are joined today by the one, the only, Cenk Uygur. Cenk, how's it going?
It's going awesome, John. And you know how we have that Vulcan mind meld on what to wear, and people joke about it because we accidentally wear the same thing all the time. Well, I saw you on the Zoom or Skype or whatever earlier, and you were wearing this, and I was gonna go change into an outfit like that because I saw you wearing it. I was like, no, I'll just stay. And
okay, here's the thing. You don't know this, I don't think, but I changed right after the pre-pour. So I did the pre-pour, and then I changed. That was the t-shirt I was wearing before I changed. How is that possible?
I know. No, I do know because I saw you on camera for a second. Okay. And I thought, how is that possible?
There's so many.
I have 12 Damage Report shirts, but they're all in red. This is the only one I have in green. And today I thought, I'll wear the green one because that one's less likely, right?
Nope, wrong. By the way, if you're out there and you would like to dress exactly like Cenk and or myself, shoptyt.com. We've got a lot of awesome shirts. Some of those designs, I love the grumpy dragons, but the traditional like sort of sports mascot dragon, they look great. It's why it's half my wardrobe. So everyone, shoptyt.com, you can dress like us. Anyway, we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of the show. So thank you everyone for joining us. Obviously, the big Trump tape that we kept being told isn't what they say it's gonna be has been revealed, and we're gonna give you our live reactions to it. Just prior to the show going live, the SCOTUS with a major decision that could have a big impact on elections going forward. More corruption in the Supreme Court. Which justice's day is it? Stay tuned to find out. And much more besides all that. And that's just in the first hour, everyone. Coming up in the aftermath, we're gonna be talking about snobby Obama wanting you to care about the lives of poor people. Jesse Waters sets him straight. How solar energy is saving Texas right now. And we might have a bit of animal news for you. So stay tuned for the aftermath as well. But in advance of all that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the streams so people know we're live. They can come, they can join in on the conversation. We can all have fun. Go hit that like button to make that happen. And you can reach out to Cenk and myself in super chats, tweets, all of that. But with all that said, Cenk, are you ready to start this thing?
Born ready, brother. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump right in this.
See, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't, you know, but this is
classified. Now we have a problem.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And there it is, that's the tape of Donald Trump talking about the classified documents that he very much had in his possession, leaked to Anderson Cooper just yesterday. And look, in a very real way, we already knew these quotes. We were led to believe it was accurate, but there was always that seed of doubt. Is it what they say it's going to be? Is it as damning as they say that it is? And it turns out, no. It's worse because he is being even more casual, even more just fancy free with these war plans, that even he admits the military drew up and that he still has long after he was no longer president. We're gonna play a little bit more of that tape for you and then jump into discussion. Buckle up and listen to this.
Well, with Milley, let me see that. I'll show you an example. He said that I wanted to attack Iran. Isn't it amazing? I have a big pile of papers. This thing just came up. Look, this was him. They presented me this. This is off the record, but they presented me this. This was him. This was the Defense Department and him.
Wow.
We looked at him. This was him. This wasn't done by me. This was him. All sorts of stuff. It's pages long. Look. Wait a minute. Let's see here.
Yeah.
I just found, isn't that amazing? This totally wins my case, you know. Except it is like highly confidential, secret. This is secret information. Look at this. You attack and
Hillary would print that out all the time, you know.
She'd send it to Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
The pervert. By the way, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
I was just saying, because we were talking about it. And you know, he said he wanted to attack Iran and what?
Yeah, he said it was.
Wow. This was done by the military, given to me. I think we can probably,
yeah? I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah, we'll have to try to
figure out. See, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't.
Now you can't. Maybe you should have when you could have, but you didn't. And no word on whether this wins his case against Milley something something Iran. But it doesn't seem like it's going to help his case when it comes to the classified documents. Cenk, is this it? Should we, you know, pull the cord, the balloons float down? Did we get him?
A little bit. Even Ari Fleischer and his former White House counsel, they're all over TV going, this is bad. It's real bad. And you know, you said, well, maybe you should have declassified it, but you didn't. Which gets to the heart of it, because no, as you know, I know you're kidding. He should not have declassified that. That was our plans to attack Iran. That is as classified as it gets. And he's just showing it to people willy-nilly. And one of his defenses was, I mean, he said to Sean Hannity in his interview, they weren't really documents. They weren't really, they were doing newspapers, clippings or whatever, right? But wait a minute. You said in that, we just heard it with our own ears. This was him. This, he keeps saying this, referring to the documents. This was him. Mm-hmm. And then he said, look, it's pages long. Look, it's definitely a document. It's pages long with our plans to attack Iran. But that was not my favorite quote. My favorite quote was the staffer. After he says it's like, it's highly classified. I could have declassified, but I didn't. Right? And she goes, now we have a problem. Don't overlook that quote. That quote was a killer. Now we have a problem.
My favorite quote from the extended tape is probably, can we get some Cokes in here? I just, you know, it's just a bunch of buds sitting around looking at classified documents, drinking Cokes, you know? It's the American dream, really. But anyway, you're totally right. I'm glad that you brought up the Brett Baer interview, which was just like a week ago. Let's bear that in mind, where he said, it's not tapes. In case you missed that, here's him talking to Brett Baer.
You were recorded saying that you had a document detailing a plan of attack on another country that was prepared by the US military for you when you were president. The Iran attack plan, you remember that?
Ready?
You were recorded.
It wasn't a document.
Okay.
I had lots of paper. I had copies of newspaper articles. I had copies of magazines.
I know. This is specifically a quote. You're quoted on the recording saying the document was secret, adding that you could have declassified it while you were president. But, quote, now I can't. You know, this is still secret, highly confidential. And the indictment cites the recording and the testimony from people in the room saying you showed it to people there that day. So you say on this, on tape.
It says just the opposite.
That you can't declassify.
What I said that I couldn't declassify it now, that's because I wasn't president. I never made any bones about that. When I'm not president, I can't declassify.
That's what you said. You didn't declassify it.
I said, no. I said I couldn't
declassify.
That wasn't a document. Brett, there was no document. That was a massive amount of papers and everything else talking about Iran and other things. And it may have been held up or may not, but that was not a document. I didn't have a document per se. There was nothing to declassify. These were newspaper stories, magazine stories, and articles.
That is just BS. None of that is defensible, which is why, as we'll get to, the right is not attempting to defend it. They're distracting, they're talking about something else, they're ignoring it, but not defending it. The military did not prepare like printouts from the LA Times. It's not magazine articles, it's not newspapers, it's a document, a specific one. And he repeatedly said there, Cenk, there was nothing to declassify. Dude, you said it's classified. You can't now argue that there was nothing to declassify when you were bragging to this person, either just to make yourself seem big, or I don't know if he was trying to flirt with her or whatever. I don't know exactly what personality failing of his doomed him once again, but it definitely doomed him. There's no arguing against that. We can hear the tape.
Yeah, there's the slightest little exoneration in here. Wait, what? I'll explain in a second.
What?
Okay. And Trump is claiming complete exoneration. So I'll explain all that. But first, here's what's not classified. Newspapers and magazine articles. That's not a thing that's classified. So it is not possible for him to be shuffling newspapers and magazines going, this is highly secret. You see the Newsweek cover? Top secret, highly classified. No, no, it was a document. Everybody on the planet knows it, even if you're pretending not to know it. And by the way, where is it? It's still missing. Like, people aren't talking about that, but Trump has not given over all the documents. And that was not in Mar-a-Lago, that was in Bedminster, New Jersey. And that idiot is still hiding documents. God knows where they are. Okay, so he claims that this is an exoneration because he's like, it's a perfect call.
Well, Cenk, why don't I actually tee that up? Why don't I, and then you can respond to it.
Yep.
Also, in addition to your thing about, you know, where's the document, which is totally right. Also, so are they interviewing the woman that he was talking to in that tape? I feel like you should probably talk to her because she saw the document. Why have we not heard about that yet? But
yeah, so they are definitely interviewing her. I have heard a little bit about it. And so we'll see if she's a witness or not. But guy, that's the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg is Mark Meadows. So now speculation that his last chief of staff, the one that he told, hey, if they kill Mike Pence, I don't mind so much. That guy might have flipped.
Yeah.
Okay. That could be the mother load. So there's a lot worse things coming. I think he's in actual trouble, like actual for the first time. Not MSNBC thing like, oh, any second now, we're gonna get him any second. No. For the first time, he's in actual trouble.
Yeah, the walls are closing in.
No,
anyway,
don't do it.
The vice grip is tightening. Trump and his team obviously are not going to admit that the now released tape of him talking about the Iran papers is bad for him. They rolled out one of his spokesmen to say the audio tape provides context, proving once again that President Trump did nothing wrong at all. Stephen Chung definitely works hard for the money that he gets as a spokesman. That's a crazy thing to say, dude. What are you talking about? But he's really only saying what Trump is also saying. He bleated on Truth Social, the deranged special prosecutor Jack Smith, working in conjunction with the DOJ and FBI, illegally leaked and spun a tape and transcript of me, which is actually an exoneration, rather than what they would have you believe. They are cheaters and thugs. So it's an exoneration. It helps him. I don't know why. Maybe I'm stupid, or maybe he is. One of the two is probably true. He's not the only one saying this, though. Steve Doocy is sort of like buying this a little bit. He said that because Trump is saying that it helps him, then maybe he leaked it. That was the context under which Fox and Friends discussed this, not how obviously damning it is, but is this actually a strategic coup by Trump? So anyway, they're saying that this means nothing, Cenk. We obviously disagree.
Yeah, you know, so I confused the Bayer and Hannity earlier in terms of the interviews. He actually did the confession in the Bayer interview, as you showed. It's because they're all saying absurd things, right? Hannity had a different absurd defense of Trump, but. I've literally lost track of the different forms of reality that they're denying. Some are like papers are not papers, documents are not documents, confessions are not confessions, 2 + 2 does not equal 4. I mean, it's like a torture chamber of gaslighting, right? But in the Doocy case, Doocy and Kilmeade had a conversation. I'm reading the tea leaves a little bit based on, and I'm trying to interpret Bert and Ernie over here, right? But I think that Kilmeade was more like, yeah, I think you might be right. They might have leaked it because it was an exoneration. Whereas Doocy was like, I think they leaked it because they thought it was an exoneration, but it ain't.
Okay.
So that's my sense of it. But so now the exoneration point. So I think he thinks it's an exoneration because there's people awkwardly laughing on the tape. And I think that actually that will work with a certain percentage of MAGA. They'd be like, what? It sounds so casual. I mean, you wouldn't be having this highly classified conversation and have people snickering in the background and ordering Cokes, right? No, you would if you're Donald Trump, because you're an idiot. And you're like, hey, everybody, look at the classified documents I have. Verbal diarrhea. Okay. So But that leads to my slight exoneration, John, which is, and it's, this one's not even full, but look, I think he took the documents to sell them. I think he took them to sell them to the highest bidder. There's a reason why you take Iran's defenses, because Saudi Arabia and Israel are very interested in Iran's defenses, okay? Among the other things that he took that are all very, very interesting, very valuable, right? But in this case, you see a counterpoint, which is maybe the moron took them just to brag, as he's doing here in the tape. He's like, hey, look at what I have. I have top secret documents I didn't declassify. Here they are. So is it possible that he did it just to show off? It's, yeah, it's not impossible that he's just that stupid.
Yeah, it's also possible that it's sort of a middle ground where what he's doing here is bragging, but what he's also doing is, in his mind, he is sort of preemptively taking down one of his enemies with the secret information that he has. It could be that he thinks he's got docs that could hurt Biden or that could hurt DeSantis or whoever. Like, maybe it is sort of almost espionage in the way that you're talking about with selling the documents to another country, but not to benefit another country, just to benefit himself. I personally think that the bragging is enough of an explanation. I think it fits with his personality and it fits with the evidence that has thus far been presented to us, but I don't rule out other possibilities.
Anyway, and guys, if it was about the bragging, if it was just, look, I'm giving you, I'm being the fairest man in America, okay? And saying maybe it was just a brag, and you see in the tape, you could make that case, right? But it ain't. He didn't give back the Iran papers. He still has them.
Yeah.
And Jared magically got $2 billion right after the election. Trump got paid millions upon millions by the LIV golf tournament that Saudi Arabia is putting together. I mean, a lot of money exchanged hands between Trump and the Saudis right after the election. So, but hey, look, while we're not MAGA, we don't have that evidence yet. It hasn't been proven in a court of law. Let's see what happens.
100%. Yeah. Like the 5 million that they're convinced that Hunter Biden got from China or Ukraine or whatever, the $2 billion that Jared Kushner definitely got, has Fox talked about the 2 billion 1% as much as the 5 million?
No way. And guys,
not remotely.
If you're in the right wing in any way, shape, or form, any part of that spectrum, anywhere from MAGA to, hey, look, I think I'm kind of right wing on crime or whatever other issues, right? Come on, man. You know Fox News is doing propaganda, right? Like, we give you all sides of it. We have an opinion, we have a perspective. We don't hide it, we're very strong with it. But Fox News, you're worried about family corruption of presidents and former vice presidents. And you think the $5 million from Hunter Biden's a big deal, and I think it's a big deal. But you don't think the $2 billion from Jared Kushner is a big enough deal to talk about it 1% as much as you talked about the 5 million? No, tell me that you're corrupt without telling me you're corrupt.
Yeah, I don't even know what the cover story is. It is literally money being handed over to the Sun. It's the same thing. Jared Kushner at the end of the day isn't gonna get $2 billion, but he's gonna make many tens of millions of dollars in fees and all that. So, or hundreds. So I literally don't even understand what the distinction is supposed to be. That what, Jared didn't hide it? So if Hunter had been more brazen, then it would be okay? I don't think Fox would say that that's okay. So again, it's just utter hypocrisy and corruption. Anyway, with that said, we do need to take our first break. But when we come back, we've got some breaking news when it comes to the SCOTUS, as well as what states are gonna be able to get away with when it comes to changing their election laws going forward. We'll have that and more after this. Okay, to all of you listening on the podcast, watching the later platform, sometimes during our social breaks, we make bets. What was the bet? The only way to know is to watch live on Twitch or YouTube. That's not fair. We're betting about Biden pardoning Trump. But anyway, you should occasionally watch the live show. But if you listen to the podcast, I love that. I listen to a lot of podcasts. That was how I originally listened to the Young Turks. If you do that, though, definitely rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It would be much appreciated. And with that said, why don't we jump into more news? This is expected to be a massive week for the Supreme Court, and already some of their decisions are coming out. In this case, it's a big one. It has to do with what was considered the independent state legislature theory, which basically says that if you want to rig your state electoral rules in terms of how elections are run, how districts are drawn, you can just do whatever you want and nobody can stop you. No, you know, state Supreme Court, no, obviously the actual Supreme Court, no federal legislature, anything goes, you can do whatever you want. It was a fantasy of some on the right, but it was a fantasy that had a measurable chance of succeeding. The Supreme Court is incredibly conservative, incredibly radical, and incredibly beholden to the right. But it did not actually work, not this time anyway. Basically, to be, I guess, a little bit more fair to them, proponents of the theory say that no other organs of state government, courts, governors, election administrators, independent commissioners can alter a legislature's actions on federal elections. That is not now accepted by the Supreme Court. The vote was 6-3, though. So John Roberts wrote with the majority, but that does still leave three: Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, saying that no, they agree with the independent state legislature theory, that you can effectively have free reign, do what you want, we're gonna keep our hands out of it, and we know exactly what the actual consequences of that would be. Cenk, what do you make of this?
I think this is as consequential as you could possibly imagine. I'm not exaggerating. This was an enormous decision. And I think today, by rejecting this completely radical theory, they have both saved democracy and saved the court. Because if they had done this, then it would have been the nail in the coffin for partisanship on the court. The court would have lost all legitimacy. And by the way, they would have ended democracy. And so it would have been a blight on the Supreme Court. That would have been historic. But guys, that means they did the right thing. And it's an enormous relief, but thank God, like this was not preordained which way it was gonna go. I mean, three justices voted with this insane, insane, completely anti-democratic idea. Just, I wanna be super clear, it would have had 1,000 repercussions. But the most important one is the Republican state legislatures, which have been gerrymandered beyond recognition, right? So they have a lock on those states. Even though in some of those states, they don't even have the majority and they still have a lock because of the gerrymandering. The legislatures could have said, we don't care who you voted for president. Trump or whoever is the president, period. The votes are irrelevant. The legislature decides. That's what they were deciding today. And so, it would have flat out ended democracy. And so as much discredit as you could possibly heap on to the fascist, disgusting justices like Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch. On the other hand, credit where credit is due to Chief Justice Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. So shockingly, they saved democracy.
That's true, I'd forgotten. Yeah, Amy Coney Barrett. By the way, look, we have over the past few years, we have given the Supreme Court credit when they've made the right decision. We're not insane. We can see when something is good or bad. But we could also point out that there are three that were fine with this. I agree with you. I don't think it's an exaggeration that it would be as bad as you say were this to get a nod of approval from the Supreme Court. Let's bear in mind, though, that even in the absence of this new theory, it obviously doesn't mean, as I'm sure you know, that we're off scot-free or whatever. I want to read the first line of the New York Times announcement about this, because it's both true and also ridiculous at the same time. The Supreme Court on Tuesday rejected a legal theory that would have radically reshaped how federal elections are conducted by giving state legislatures largely unchecked power to set rules for federal elections and to draw congressional maps warped by partisan gerrymandering. That is true, but also would have allowed them to do radically partisan gerrymandering. Like, They are already doing that. That's the issue. There are theoretically checks on it, but they're not consequential. Florida did an insane gerrymander. They effectively just gave the map to Ron DeSantis and let him draw his own districts. And then the state Supreme Court, which he appointed a bunch of the members to, said that it was fine. Like, and that's without this independent state legislature theory. And by the way, they also have already radically gerrymandered the state legislatures. As you said, they may not be able to do worse with Congress, but like, so for instance, to give you an example of it, the case that they're actually talking about here has to do with North Carolina. That legislature, there's a super majority for the Republicans there, thanks to a Democrat switching over. A super majority of the state legislature, it's effectively a 50-50 state. If you look at the actual last election results, it was 49.9 to 48.6. This is about as split as a state can be. And they wanted to capitalize on the power that they've already baked in with a gerrymandered legislative map to create a congressional map that would have given them a 10-4 split in a 50-50 state. That is what basically every Republican in the country, other than perhaps Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, and John Roberts, say is perfectly acceptable. There's no problem with that. And that's so much of this they've already been able to do, even without this new legal theory being given support by the Supreme Court. So it's like we've avoided a darker next step, Cenk, but we're still in very dark territory.
Yeah, so two things that are important here. One is on the gerrymandering. You're absolutely right, John. We're already 97% awfully gerrymandered, right? And so the court has stepped in, or different courts have stepped in North Carolina, New York, and I believe Alabama, and including the Supreme Court, saying, I think it was in Alabama, saying, no, you guys are going too far. This is a racial problem, not just a political problem, because you're basically erasing black voters from with the way that you gerrymandered them, stuffing them into one district. The Clyburn move that he did in South Carolina, helping the Republicans pick up seats as long as his seat was safer. So they've reined in like the very extreme last 3%, but it's still super extreme throughout. But this decision, it affects the most extreme gerrymandering. That's not why they saved democracy. It's because the state legislatures could have said, yes, we are not going with the duly, the actual electors. In, for example, in the last election, we've convened and we're going with the fake electors, and the state legislature is supreme and gets to overrule the Electoral College.
Yeah.
That could have happened. And I guarantee you, if it could happen, Republicans definitely would have done it. And so that's why it saved democracy. The gerrymandering, there's still a long way to go before we get any semblance of sanity in this country regarding that.
I 100% agree with you. I would just end by saying, like, if this had happened, that we just choose the winner thing would have been a lock. It would have automatically happened. But we still have a pretty good chance of them trying that in a number of states. I mean, they're not taking over these county election boards and secretaries of state and all that for nothing. Like, they have a multi-level strategy to be able to nullify the results of elections. This just took like the strategy out, but they still have backups. So we do very much need to be on watch as we move towards this next election. Surprise, surprise, more corruption on the Supreme Court. Who is it this time? It's Alito. Actually, again, he's been in the news quite a bit recently. Specifically, this isn't about Alito himself. This is about his wife, who was involved in a land lease mineral exchange sort of thing that we have to talk about. So Martha Ann Baumgardner Alito is the individual. So a year ago, she decided to see if a 160-acre plot of land that she owned would produce oil. In a lease filed with the Grady County Clerk, she entered into an agreement with Citizen Energy for revenue generated from oil and gas that were obtained from the land that she inherited from her late father. This is the sort of lease that there are many of in Oklahoma, literally thousands of oil and gas leases. It's a big energy producing state. last year. Before the lease was activated, a line in Alito's financial disclosures labeled mineral interests valued between $100,000 and $250,000. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think I can speak for all of us. We all have mineral interests valued at hundreds of thousands of dollars. If extraction on the plot proves fruitful, then Citizen Energy will now pay Alito's wife 3/16 of all the money that it makes from oil and gas sales on that land. And the interesting thing here is that in the past, Alito has actually, perhaps more so than some of the other Supreme Court justices, been willing to recuse himself from cases that pose a potential financial conflict of interest, generally having to do with the fact that he has very broad investments. So there's a lot of different areas where, in theory, his financial interests could come into play. But because Citizen Energy isn't implicated in any cases directly before the Supreme Court, this isn't a thing that we would expect that he would have to recuse himself from. But the issue is that there's like specific conflicts of interest, and then there are conflicts of interest. His wife now has this investment. Larger regulations having to do with oil and gas. Any decision that affects the oil and gas industry will have an effect on her financial interests. And so how broad will his recusals actually be? And bear in mind, this guy also has often, Alito, I mean, ruled against the EPA, sort of setting the stage potentially for more money to be generated in these sorts of cases. And so, as we're in this time, Cenk, where people I think are paying more attention than usual to conflicts of interest in the Supreme Court, like I really think that we need to broaden our idea of what these conflicts of interest are. And I think the time has come to talk about what we've been talking about over the last few years with Congress. Where should they be able to own individual investments when they have so much unchecked singular lifelong power to affect so many different areas of the American economy?
Yeah, first of all, the number of times that powerful people have been involved in a land lease mineral deal that wasn't corrupt is zero. Okay, so look, there's a difference between the dude you see at the beach trying to find the coins with that little thing that, you know, okay, you're a regular dude, you're doing that in your backyard and you're trying to find your land lease minerals. Have at it, hoss, okay? You're a Supreme Court justice's wife, and with a giant benefactor, you do a land lease mineral exploration. I got news for you. They're gonna find something there. Either they're gonna find oil, hey, congratulations, you're like the beach dude, you hit the jackpot, or they're gonna pretend they found something and they're gonna hand you a giant sum of money one way or another, because everything is gonna be okay, okay?
Yeah.
So don't tell me that this is a normal situation. No way. This biases Alito in a massive way, in all the ways that you described, John, but look, at this point, there's two justices that are completely lost. Alito and Thomas, they're just basically saying, yeah, we're corrupt. We never told you about it. We've been lying the whole time. We take enormous money from billionaires. And it's not a coincidence that we rule in favor of them literally every single time.
Yeah.
So they're basically going, what are you gonna do about it?
I agree with you. I will just throw out there, I think I've been attacked slash mocked quite harshly by, I believe, Brett Ehrlich for this point. But and I get that this is crazy under our current system, but why is it crazy to propose something like not a vow of poverty, but a vow of not insane radical affluence for our public servants? Why should the expectation be that if you are going to be given massive, often unchecked power, that we can't have a broad expectation that you will not personally profit off of it? That you can have the power and the influence and, you know, the platform and all of that, but we expect that you will not become or, you know, expand your wealth while maintaining that power. That Nancy Pelosi can be a congresswoman for literally decades and she can make a living, obviously. She's not gonna be on the street, but you cannot make hundreds of millions of dollars by parlaying your power. Like, why is that crazy? Especially for Supreme Court justices that have that power for the rest of their life, that we wouldn't expect that they have to maintain a lifestyle like regular people.
Well, to be honest, John, it is a little crazy.
But is it?
Yeah, and the reason is,
but is
then
it?
Look, these folks are in a situation where And you could say this is right or wrong or whatever, but they can make millions of dollars at a law firm, at corporations, etc. It is what it is. We might not like it, but it's true. If you say to them, hey, you're only going to make whatever it is, like let's say $200,000, which is a lot to the average person, but to their class, not that much at all, it's going to encourage them to be more corrupt. So that's number one. That's a huge problem that I have. And number two, I think they should be able to, you know, have investments like everybody else, but blind trust makes sense, making sure that they don't know, you know, if their investments are going to be affected by the decisions in front of them, whether they're the Supreme Court or Congress. That makes a lot of sense. So you could put some safeguards in, but if you say you can't invest at all or you can't own anything, nobody, like I'm keeping it real with you, people that went to Ivy Leagues, literally none of them are going to want to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you could say good riddance to them, but I'm just keeping it real with you.
I mean, I think that then maybe we would only get people that genuinely care about the position. Is that the worst thing? I don't know. Anyway, just opening up a conversation. Let's talk about it. I like your idea though. I'll consider that a stepping stone towards my dystopic ideal. Anyway, with that said, we are going to take our second break of the hour. When we come back, hey, powerful people advocating for violence against migrants. How fun. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everyone, for those of you who just joined, definitely hit the like button as we rolled into the second half of the show. We got some big news to talk about, so buckle up, let's jump into this. Stephen Miller has long been considered one of the most grotesque and purposefully cruel members of the former Trump administration. But an accusation being lobbed his way by Miles Taylor, also formerly of the Trump administration, makes it seem even worse. He's being accused of advocating for atrocities against migrants. Now, before I read the quotes from the upcoming book Blowback by Miles Taylor, bear in mind that Stephen Miller denies 100% that the conversation we're going to talk about actually took place. And also the person that Stephen Miller is supposedly talking to also denies the content of the conversation. That said, we are going to evaluate what we think. Here is the claim being made by Miles Taylor. So Stephen Miller says to this individual, Admiral, the military has aerial drones, correct? To which the admiral says yes. He says, are some of those drones equipped with missiles, correct? Sure, the admiral says, clearly wondering where the line of questioning was going. Stephen Miller continues, and when a boat full of migrants is in international waters, they aren't protected by the US Constitution, right? The admiral says, technically no, but I'm not sure what you're getting at. Stephen Miller says, tell me why then can't we use a predator drone to obliterate that boat? The admiral looks nonplussed, because Stephen, it would be against international law. Miller apparently goes on to say, the United States launches airstrikes on terrorists in disputed areas all the time, particularly pirates commandeering ships. So what's the difference? And the admiral says that obviously there's a difference between attacking terrorists and attacking innocent migrants on a boat. I don't know if that was able to convince Stephen Miller, but thankfully, at least as far as we know, they did not conduct a mission of this type. But anyway, Cenk, these are the claims that are being made by Miles Taylor. He has been a noted critic of many members of the Trump administration, basically since he left it. As I said, they both denied that this conversation took place, but what do you make of it?
So look, significant grain of salt on this one, because the admiral in question says, I just don't remember that conversation. And the admiral in this case was appointed by Obama and eventually left the Trump administration and voted for Biden. So he's a credible source, and the credible source is saying, I was there and I just don't remember this conversation happening. So significant grain of salt. Okay, now having said that, look at the context. So why would anybody be surprised by this? Trump suggested that we build a wall and a moat filled with snakes and alligators, and that the fence be electric, so anyone who touched it would be executed. And I mean, he doesn't get the snakes move, so they wouldn't just stay there. But anyways, among the different dumb ideas that he had, so murdering immigrants was a thing that was actually discussed in the administration in other instances. So like if it was discussed in this instance, it would be Tuesday. It wouldn't be that remarkable. right? And if any of you remember, the favorite book of Steve Bannon and a lot of the right wing is The Camp of the Saints. And that's where there's an immigrant boat coming in filled with immigrants from India, in that case, to Europe. And the hero of the book murders everyone on the boat. And so this is kind of a right, crazy, radical right wing idea that they've had for a long time.
Yeah, 100%. We know they had talked about using live ammunition on migrants at the border rather than just trying to, you know, like ward them off with smoke and things like that. This fits in. Now, that doesn't mean that it's true. It could mean that that's why, if Miles Taylor is lying about this, fabricating it, you would presumably fabricate something that's believable. So we can't just trust something because it's believable. That said, I like the context you added about the admiral. I would also say, though, why would Miles Taylor name a specific admiral if he is just making it up? Presumably, the admiral will be asked. The admiral will not play ball. So if he is making it up, it would be making it up with the expectation that the admiral is going to deny it, but it wouldn't matter anyway. They would still sell books. Maybe that's possible. It's also possible, and I don't know this admiral, I'm just speculating here. If he had this conversation, and he's saying he doesn't remember it, but let's say he does remember it. If he was asked about the possibility of blowing a migrant boat out of the water, and if he didn't go public with it for whatever reason, fears of being dismissed from his position or whatever, would you want to be outed as having kept that quiet years later? Would you want people to believe that you effectively covered for a guy advocating for a mass murder? I don't know. This is just speculation. I don't know any of these people. And Miles Taylor, I don't know how credible we would consider him at this point. He was in the Trump administration, but lots of liars were in the Trump administration. So who knows? But anyway, there's a lot of considerations in trying to evaluate whether this is true, I think.
Any final thoughts? Last quick thought here is, look, everybody's got a different standard for what is credible enough. So one witness, two witnesses, four witnesses. For example, in Islam, you can't convict anyone unless you have four witnesses, which is near impossible, right? But that's a standard. And in journalism, you're supposed to have two sources to make sure that you got the story right. So in this case, you have one witness, that's Miles Taylor. You don't have another one. So you make of that what you will, right? Just understand that context, and it might be right, it might be wrong. Two witnesses would be way better than one witness, but that is what he's saying. And he said a lot of terrible things about the Trump administration already. I don't think that this one, necessarily would have sold quote unquote more books. I mean, he was anonymous, the guy who threw Trump under the bus the first time around. So. I get it. I think that his motivation to make this up is unlikely, right? And I get the admiral's motivation for not remembering it, but we just don't know. It's one witness.
I'm gonna add one extra layer. It seems to a regular person, the idea that if he doesn't remember this conversation, how could it possibly have taken place? It's such a bizarre, insane conversation that if you or I had this conversation, it would stand out. But as you pointed out, maybe it was just Tuesday. For all we know, this sort of stuff was discussed constantly. Maybe it is difficult to remember all the instances of some one of these insane monsters advocating for atrocities. So maybe a point in defense of the admiral. I will also just briefly say, we're not gonna dive full into this, but just a reminder of all that has been normalized by Donald Trump over the past few years. Ron DeSantis is now going around this week, including to NBC News, and advocating for migrants entering the United States who are suspected of carrying drugs to be murdered, to be just shot dead. Now, how you would know that they definitely have drugs, I have no idea. Why you couldn't just arrest them. If you can see them and know that they have drugs, why you would choose to just shoot them, I don't know. But he in multiple cases said, you absolutely can use deadly force. Of course you can use deadly force. If they're cutting through the border while trying to run product into this country, they're gonna end up stone cold dead as a result of that bad decision. And if you do that one time, you're not gonna see them mess with our wall ever again. He was in some ways responding to the fact that he says that they're cutting big holes out of the wall, which seems to be an argument to not have the wall anymore if it's not actually stopping people from coming in. But we rightly, I think, criticized Donald Trump a week or two ago again for advocating for the death penalty for drug dealers. That's a barbaric policy that seems to have been cribbed from some of the most repressive governments around the world. Can we also stop and admit that this is way worse than that? Because at least in Trump's case, there was a legal process that then leads to state-sanctioned murder. In this case, DeSantis is saying, if you think it's a drug dealer, if you think it's a cartel member, you just kill them. And he's the more reasonable one, Cenk. Trump's the crazy. DeSantis is the more reasonable guy. What do you think?
Yeah, so first of all, the Mexican drug cartel in the early days used cleaning ladies to bring in drugs. Hundreds of them, maybe thousands of them. So I guess DeSantis would have lined them up against the wall and just murdered all those cleaning ladies and be like, haha, I got him. Which ironically is the kind of thing that a drug cartel would do. So you must be so proud, Republicans. And John, DeSantis is trying to out crazy Trump. Yep. And he thinks that's the winning strategy. That's why I think that Chris Christie has a slight outside chance of winning. Because even though he's so heavily against Trump in devastating ways, and that's going to piss off MAGA, he's still in this sanity-based world, and he's tough and strong against Trump. Whereas DeSantis, I think, is hitting the worst of all worlds, where he's not really doing any damage to Trump, and he's also lost track of the sanity-based world, which, forget us, turns off some Republican moderates and some Republican donors. So, and there are no Republican moderates, but like within the spectrum of insanity,
sure,
right? And so I think it's really poorly played by DeSantis.
Yeah, and horrendous at the same time. So there's the strategic layer and then the, you know, just basic human decency layer. Yeah, I agree. If there was any reason in the Republican Party, Chris Christie would probably be leading the primary. He's getting no support whatsoever, even though they'll get all of their tax cuts and all that that they want out of Chris Christie. It feels so weird to be like kind of boosting Chris Christie when Chris Christie would be so bad, but he is way less insane than a lot of them. When we decided that we were gonna do this story, there's this feeling that I get, and I don't know if you sometimes experience this, where what Ron DeSantis is saying is so obviously evil. It's just, if there is evil in the world, then telling people we should be killing migrants, because he knows he's not giving a preview of what the border, you know, patrol is gonna do. He's telling regular conservatives, I'm okay with casual murder of these people. That's the message that's being sent. So we have to respond to it because it's horrendous. But I also know he is right that this, you know, Trump will still beat him or whatever. But this is what millions and millions of Americans want to hear. If he said it to NBC News, this is not Lauren Underwood, like with a hidden camera in one of his little meetings or whatever. He desperately wants this message to be spread because he knows there are a lot of people who want more blood. They don't think Trump or DeSantis are radical enough. They want him to come out and say more Mexicans need to be murdered, just flat out. No qualifications, no due process. There is an appetite for that. And it just, it feels so, it makes me feel almost like rhetorically helpless knowing that I can't appeal to, you know, common sense or goodwill or basic decency or what Christianity should produce and not wanting to advocate for murder, because none of it works, because millions of Americans desperately want not just like tiptoeing towards fascism. They want to be goose stepping in the streets. They want to get to the end game of this thing. And I feel this growing sense of dread as we move towards that. But anyway, any final thoughts about the story?
Yeah, I do. Look, DeSantis is not just a meatball, he's also a cheeseball. And he is a guy like Ted Cruz who will say anything to appease the base. He doesn't, you know, does he mean it in that will he actually do it? Yeah, he will actually do it. Does he mean it as in he thinks it's good policy? Of course not. He went to Ivy League schools. He knows this is atrocious, disgusting, etc. And he's willing to be disgusting on purpose to pander to his base. But the far more depressing point is the one John made, which is that it does pander to that base. And that it's not the entire Republican Party, but about at least half the party thinks, oh, murdering immigrants that came across the border without even knowing what they're up to, that sounds awesome.
100% terrible. Well, unfortunately, we've reached the end of our first hour and regrettably the end of our time with Cenk Uygur. Obviously, Cenk, you host a little show called The Young Turks, I think. People can watch that. Is it on like Rumble or where can they see that?
I believe they can see it anywhere. Type in TYT, any platform you're on. But seriously, everybody, wherever you watch Damage Report, you can watch Young Turks at 6 o'clock Eastern, 6 to 8 o'clock. Make sure you're checking that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Cenk. Always a pleasure to have you on. Have a good day.
You too.
And for those of you out there, there is more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.